Hello and welcome to The Tips, a brand new weekly podcast from the DP World Tour. This week, we are coming in hot off the back of our first major since we launched. So we will touch on the PGA Championship, as well as looking forward to the KLM Open and the Charles Schwab Challenge from Colonial. As ever, we have the help of some expert guests who will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yet this week, joining us for his first appearance, we have Niall Lyons from Odds Checker and Ben Coley again, who is becoming a regular here on The Tips. Thank you both for joining us. And yeah, only one place to start, the US PGA Championship. Niall, let's start with you. Storylines, how much did you enjoy it? We had, you know, a Koepka win, we had Blocky, Mr. Block. What were the highlights for you?
Yeah, I was actually quite critical of the course early on in the week, but it really was a treat on Sunday. I warmed to the place a little, especially that sixth hole where Koepka went in the water and, yeah, the drama around that. But I think we learned a fair bit about Victor Hovland over the weekend. Obviously, he was under severe pressure following the final round performances at St Andrews and Masters, being a bit disappointing there. This time around, he was much better, and even Brooks in beast mode, you know, he more or less matched them the whole way before it went really downhill, unfortunately, on the 16th hole. But that really wasn't his fault. It was a bit unlucky, the poor lie in the bunker. But I do think we learned a lot about him. He's kind of base camping his way towards a major victory, and hopefully it won't be too long before he lands one. Koepka was obviously absolutely scintillating on the final day. It was one of those, it was a real treat to watch, especially his pace on the greens. You know, I never thought they would find a putter as sexy as Jordan Spieth, but it really was impressive over the weekend. His pace on Sunday was something to behold. So yeah, Brooks Koepka lands another major, and it was good to see. Obviously, Michael Black was an incredible story across the 4 days, and I still don't believe it happened, the hole-in-one 15th. It's just so hard to believe it. I don't think he believed it either, no matter how many times he was told the ball was in the hole. He just couldn't believe it. So and obviously the interview after, I really enjoyed that, when people were telling him how much money he had made and how many lessons it would take for him to earn that kind of money back home. Yeah, a real feel-good story for the sport, and obviously, he gets a few invites from here on too, so hopefully he follows that in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, that's right. There are so many great storylines, and they may well continue. We could see Hovland v. Koepka again in the Ryder Cup, and of course, Michael Block. Block party. He is having a great time, and he also is being invited by the RBC Canadian Open. They tweeted that they heard the screams from across Lake Ontario over the border, so we'll see a bit more of him as well this season. From the betting front, we were close. Hovland was 28-1. I think he was tipped, we had from Tom Jacobs. He landed 8-1. Justin Rose, top Englishman. Matt Cooper had Scheffler just on the nose, so a bit short in second place. But Ben Coley, you brought home something quite tasty, to thank to a little Australian, I believe.
Yeah, it's amazing how your week can turn on a final round. Cam Davis shooting 65 made it a good week in the end. I'll be honest, I mean, I also said Koepka was a terrible price, so we don't get everything right. It's the nature of this job. You're going to look an idiot sometimes, and Koepka made me look one for, well, throughout the week. But thankfully, Davis made it less consequential. It was a brilliant final round by him, and I know he's not the big talking point by any means, but I do think he's a serious player. We're seeing it come together now. Three top tens in massive events over the last couple of months after a really poor start to the year. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes next. And you know, obviously there's a good chance for him this week. But beyond that, he's made the cut in every major. He's had an impact in one now. And I think onwards and upwards. And he'll be one of the leading Australians for the next 20 years, I think. I think he's a serious, serious player. So yeah, it was good to see him put it all together in the final round.
Yeah, he's super exciting talent. And I sense we may hear more from him in the future, but also potentially this week, as a few people fancy him. He's done all right around Colonial before. So with that in mind and the KLM Open, let's get into this week's action from both sides of the pond, starting with the KLM from Bernardus Golf Club. Yep, we return to Bernardus for the third year in a row for the KLM Open in the Netherlands. Victor Perez, of course, prevailed here last year after a sensational putting display during the back nine, and then a sudden death victory playoff against Ryan Fox. Perez holding some monster putts to get there in the fourth playoff hole victory when he looked done and dusted a few times. The Frenchman will be back to defend his title this week, and with a Rolex Series win under his belt already this year, and 12th place at the PGA Championship after a brilliant Sunday, he comes in as one of the absolute favourites. Ben, do you think that price is fair alongside Adrian Mironk at 14-1?
Yeah, it was always going to be these two battling for favouritism, two of the informed players on the DP World Tour, obviously, before the PGA. Mironk was brilliant in Italy. Perez been really solid all year and finished in the top 15 last week. So certainly big chance for both of them. There's always a question mark about the travel aspect. We see both sides of it. I think you could probably argue that Nicolai Højgaard in Italy, when he flew home for I think, fifth place, flying in from Texas, he probably wasn't at 100% those first 3 days. And as the jet lag wore off, he began to find his game. On the flip side, Lucas Herbert couldn't have had a worse journey to Japan, could he? And he still won. So it can go both ways. I remember Paul Casey winning in Dubai when he'd flown in from California. There are loads of examples where players cope with it just fine. And it's not the longest trip in the world from the East Coast to the States either. Maybe even on a KLM flight, who knows? But they've both got big chances. Personally, was happy to take them on. But look, they're the two class acts. And I think it's the reason they're here as much as anything is they can't afford to miss a beat with the competitive nature of the Ryder Cup battle at the moment. You know, some more names last week, like Sepp Straka, reminding us all that they're still in the conversation. So for a player like Perez and for Mironk, they know that they can't sleep. They can't, you know, I said it after Italy, like Mironk winning there was a massive feather in his cap. But if he has a bad summer, it won't be enough. So onwards and upwards. And they're both big runners here.
As you say, yeah, the Ryder Cup team somewhat taking shape. And now one that caught my eye is Joost Luiten, the home favourite. He's still available at 40-1, I've seen in places. And did he catch your eye at all? Because he obviously really loves this event. He's had a couple of wins before in the past. And he knows how to get it done.
Yeah, he really does. The only thing that really goes against him is it's 5 years and counting now for a win for Joost Luiten. And obviously he went off the boiler for a couple of years. He's playing a bit better in the last number of months, even earlier on in the season in the Thailand Classic and in the Indian Open, two third place finishes. And then again in Japan a number of weeks ago, or in Korea, sorry, he was third as well. So that's three top three finishes in his last seven events. So yeah, he definitely is coming in hot, and you know he's often played well in his home open before. So yeah, you can't rule out Joost Luiten, especially on a tee to green test.
Yeah, absolutely. He has won two KLMs, but they're not at this course, which is Bernardus. It's nearly 7,500 yards. So fair to say, got a fair bit of distance. Long hitters may well be looked at. And that obviously made sense with Ryan Fox last year, narrowly missing out. We've spoken about Perez there, but Ben, what sort of stats, before we find out your tips, what sort of stats were you looking at when picking your selections for this week at the KLM Open?
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at the two renewals we've had so far, they've both had a very, very clear sort of makeup, and yet both different to each other. So the first year, Christopher Broberg blasted it all over the golf course, and he got away with it. And you can hear there are fairways that run alongside each other. It's a links-style course that is appropriately wide open, and equally sometimes a small miss off the tee finds more trouble than a big miss, and that certainly played into his hands. And then last year, it was a driver's paradise, you know, Perez, Fox, Mironk, a load of other quality drivers of the golf ball. I lean towards the latter. I think you have to look at Broberg's win as a bit of a freak result. He obviously had a brilliant week with the putter, one of the best on record in strokes gain terms on the DP World Tour. He chipped in when it all looked like it was going pear-shaped. And if he hadn't done that, you'd be looking at Matty Schmidt having won that, and then Victor Perez, just brilliant drivers of the golf ball. So I do think a little bit of pop off the tee is important. I think, yeah, it's going to be firm again, reasonably firm at least, and the ball does run out, but it's still a long golf course. And more importantly, I think sometimes it's important to remember, how often are these guys hitting driver? That's as big a question as the latent advantage of how far they hit it. And I think if you're hitting driver 12, 13, 14 times around, it favours players like Mironk, like Perez, like Schmidt, and the other good drivers in the field. And I think this is a course where you can do that. So above all else, to answer your question, strokes gained off the tee, I think we'll see another big, strong, good driver of the golf ball win this tournament.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, just a reminder there, Christopher Brogo was 23 under when he won, which is 10 shots less than Victor Perez. Astonishing. Niall, I know you want to jump in and say something there. And on the back of that, were there any other courses, because we've only been here, you know, a couple of years, that you looked at when you were looking at your picks that sort of brought back memories or ideas or trains of thoughts that we know golf bettors like to go down?
Well, yeah, there's numerous courses where you're going to look to. Obviously, it's a Kyle Phillips design. He designed the Grove course in London, that held the 2016 British Masters. There's a couple of editions of the Nordea Masters as well in Sweden that he's designed, and the Dundonald Links, which has held the Scottish Open back in 2017. I think it's important to look at links form this week. Obviously, Perez and Fox were first and second last year. They make up two of the last three winners of the Alfred Dunhill Links. Obviously, Broberg's a bit, you know, as Ben said, it was a bit of a freak result. But then you look at Matty Schmid in second place that year. He, I actually quite like this week as well. He obviously won the silver medal at Royal St. George's back in 2021. Go back to fourth place and you Thomas Dietrich there in 2021 as well. Obviously, he was beaten in a playoff in the Scottish Open at the Renaissance too. So, yeah, it's important to obviously look at the Kyle Phillips designs, who's played well there across the numerous events played down the years. And then obviously the links form definitely ties in as well.
Nice. Okay, so we've got a bit of links, bit of Carl Phillips driving off the tee. I mean, there's obviously only a few names that come to them. So time to get into the selections. And Ben, let's start with you for your headline pick for the KLM Open.
Yeah, I'm going to give the vote to Marcus Helikilde. He played pretty well in Abu Dhabi at Yas Links at the start of the year. That's another course, another Phillips design where Perez won. So that's a nice straightforward tie. And someone like Sebastian Soderberg, who was second there, he was fifth in his only try at Barnardus as well. So a nice little connection between those two. Helikilde played well there. He's since improved, got his best DP World Tour finish in career. That was an exposed golf course where you had to have a good short game. I mean, Pablo Larrazabal winning there. We saw a lot of good sort of link style players in the mix, Robert McIntyre being one of those. And although he's missed two cuts since, he played poorly in Italy, but he didn't do much wrong in Belgium last time. He drove the ball well, which is what he does when he's playing well. He's a fantastic, long, pretty straight driver of the golf ball. He missed the cut narrowly there because he putted badly. Generally, the putter's been a strength. If you go back to the Ras Al Khaimah Championship, where again, he played really well for three of the four rounds. He ranked second in strokes gained putting there. And then to top it off, we rewind 2 years. He played here at Barnardus and he was second through 36 and 54 holes. Shot 75 on Sunday under pressure. But remember, he was a Challenge Tour player at the time. He didn't have DP World Tour membership. He would go on to graduate through the Challenge Tour, of course. But he's come a long way in the 2 years. And I think the one question mark I had against him sort of earlier in the season was he plays a lot of good golf and has not really had a chance to win. But he did in Korea. He was beaten by one of the most prolific winners in this kind of company in Pablo Larrazabal. And I think next time he gets a chance, he'll stick around. So on a course where his power is a massive advantage, if that putter is back to where it was at the start of the season, he'd be a big player here.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, you took all of my lovely stats there. That's absolutely fine. But he knows how to get it done, though. Three wins in 2021, the Challenge Tour. Before that, he is 40-1 with six places at the moment and 1.5 points each way allocated from Ben there on his opening pick. Niall, who have you got in return for your main pick?
Yeah, I'm going for Adrian Meronk. He's obviously got the trio of open victories at the Irish, Australian and Italian Open, so he's looking to add the Dutch to this to get the quartet. I actually backed him last week in the PGA, and if you told me, you know, at the start of the week that he'd be 10th off the tee and 26th on approach, I'd have been really excited about the chances of backing him at 200-1, and I would have thought that I would have got at least a place sweat out of it. I didn't quite, you know, he finished back in 40th. He did shoot 2 under in the final day, and he was 6th on approach for the final 18 holes as well. But as usual, reliable short game actually let him down across the week, and that's why he couldn't figure. But he was 3rd here on debut last year. I think his long game's just really ominous. He's obviously got the winner, Marco Simoni, there. As Ben says, it's a big feather in his cap for the Ryder Cup. But the difference that I would make between him and Perez is that I think there's a bit more pressure on Meronk to really, you know, keep winning at this lick. Perez is obviously, I think he's already inside the qualifying places for the Ryder Cup, and I think he'd probably stay there. But it's going to be a tall order for Meronk to get into the qualifying places. And as Ben says, 4 months is a long time in golf. And he's going to really need to keep up this form to get a captain's pick. I do think he'll get in the end, but he will need to keep up the form. And I think, you know, he was 10th on Yas Links earlier on in the year, the Kyle Phillips design, and was third here on debut. So it's just one of those things as punters, you know, if you're on the train, you know, look at what Scheffler's won in the last 12 months. And if you didn't back him in his first couple of wins, it's quite difficult to get over the hump. You think you've kind of missed the prices and you've missed the chances to get on. If you've backed Moronk in one or two of his wins in the last 12 months, then I think it makes it all the more easier to get involved around 16-1 here. So yeah, Adrian Moronk for me to get the quartet of opens.
Nice. Well, there you go. And fair to say, we're very much on the train. He was picked by Mr. Coley on the podcast a few weeks ago at 20-1 in the Italian. So he's 14-1 best price. And that was just 3 points on the nose, and he's actually the same on the exchange. So he's obviously fancied pretty highly here. And when you looked at his numbers on the DP World Tour website, fifth in greens in regulation, second in tee to green strokes gain, it's just top 10 everything. So he really is finding some good stuff this year. And as you say, trying to apply the pressure into that Ryder Cup side. So that's Adrian Moronk and Marcus Helikilder first off. Second and final main pick from you, please, Ben.
I'm going to go with Guido Migliozzi, another Ryder Cup hopeful. Fair to say he's some way down the pecking order at the moment. He would need to get back to the form that saw him win in France last year and really kick on from that. But I thought he was a really good price here. I think everybody wanted to back him in Italy last time for obvious reasons, you know, going back to his national open. He is a player. I think he'll have a good chance to win that at some stage. He's someone who you think will perform better the more it matters. We've seen that in the US Open. We've seen him winning three times on the DP World Tour. So I'm not saying people are wrong to back him there, but we're getting a bigger price here. And we might be getting a more suitable course as well. He was 10th here last year. He was in no form at the time. Had a difficult fight. He shot 75 in the final round. So he was a good final round away from being involved in that playoff potentially. And if you look at the sort of data behind how he performed in Italy, he was just awful on the greens. He ranked 65th in the end of those who made the cut, so almost last in putting. He'd been putting well before that. We know he runs hot and cold with the putter. We know he's a big hitter. I think he ranked second in distance and first in fairways when he played in Japan a couple of months ago. And since he came back from that two-month break between India and Japan, he's played three tournaments. He's played well in all of them. And it's just the fact that he didn't putt well in Italy, which makes it look like his form has taken a turn for the worse. I don't think it has. He's got top 20s at Yas Links and the Dunhill Links. I thought he was the best value probably in the tournament this week at 66-1. So it's a point each way from me. And he'd be one I'm pretty excited about. Hopefully those putts drop.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Arnaus, we mentioned before, he can be enigmatic, but when courses suit him, he seems to remember that and really go well. We've seen it in Kenya before. And he is, key to remember, he's a three-time winner. So that's right. Those, I think he's down to around 50-1. We're looking now for six places. So you've worked your magic and people are listening on the odds front, but still very much available there. And just like Marcus, went very well last year, but both hit 75s on Sunday. So hopefully they've learned those lessons going into this year. Niall, your second and final outright pick as well.
Yeah, I quite like Ross Fisher. I'm actually quite keen to get on side a couple of the guys who played US Open qualifying at Walton Heath last week. And Ross was one of them, obviously. And he qualified as well, shooting 9 under par across the 36 holes. And, you know, this Phillips design, I think, you know, it's a mixture of links and Heathland. You know, I think Walton Heath is the perfect preparation for it. There's a lot of these guys, you know, probably 98% of the field who didn't play golf or didn't play a tournament last week. Obviously, a hell of a lot of them played the qualifying, but he's 43 years old and still one of the longest on tour. I think you're going to need to hit the ball pretty far this week. Last time out at the Sudal Open, he was second off the tee and 10th on approach, but he was near last on and around the greens in both those departments. So he obviously brought that long game to Walton Heath, and you'd assume that the short game picked up a little also. He was eighth after round one here last year and 13th after round two. He had a bit of a poor weekend. But he does have three runner-up finishes at the Dunhill Links as well, which I think is quite an important correlating event this week. He, of course, led the Open as well. Half a point to anybody who can remember which Open he led heading into the final day.
Turnberry, 2009.
100%. My
first Open. It's the great pub quiz question is which Aussie was in the mix there, which Niall will know, obviously. I mean, we're just showing
Matt
off now.
Goggin.
It was Matt Goggin. There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, Ross Fisher for me. Anything above 66-1 is, I think, is quite eye-catching this week, given his performance last week at Walton Heath.
Yeah, he's actually, you can still get 80-1 for six places there. He, of course, is a five-time winner on tour. It's been nearly 10 years, which is remarkable to think since his last. But as you say, some sneaky form and hasn't actually missed a cut since October, which is quite remarkable effort from Ross. So yeah, 80-1, that was, you were just going for 1 point each way, I believe, from Niall there. And of course, we will recap all of these at the end. We've also got a special bet. So this week, we're doing something slightly, we're doing a cross double the first time. It's a Coley Lions collab. And we're going to top 20 in each event, which will be worth 2 points as singles. And then 1 point we will do as a double. So Niall, we've given you the KLM Open. So who is it for your top 20 that you're going to be throwing our way for this first ever groundbreaking tips cross double?
It's Mathieu Pavon, top 20 finish. He's yet to win on tour. It's a long time now. So yeah, I think maybe top 20 finish is the better option this week. Once again, he's another qualifier from the US Open at Walton Heath. Two rounds of 68, super impressive there. Last time out, he led the Italian Open through 36 holes. He was fourth heading into the final day, but a final round of 79 scuppered his chances there. He did most of his good work on the greens that week. He can consider himself slightly unlucky, maybe not to have a win on the DP World Tour. He shot 19 under in the Open to España last October, only to be done up by John Rahm, who won by six shots. He's got runner-ups in Portugal and Mauritius as well, which suggests he's capable in the wind. I think there's a fair bit of wind forecast here these first couple of days, which I think will play into the players who's got good form on links. He does have a good effort on a Kyle Phillips design at Dundonald. He was third at the Scottish Open there back in 2017. So, yeah, I'm going for Mathieu Pavon, top 20 finish.
Lovely. He's available at 3-1, as you say, and that was for 2 points. Yeah, he opened with an 8-under 63 in Italy for first round leader by a couple of shots. So got some form, and he had three top tens in four starts early in the year, the Asian Swing and into the SDC Championship South Africa. So there you go. We will at the end reveal who he's been cross double with, but 3-1, Mathieu Pavon for 2 points there. And that is a summary of the KLM Open this week. Okay, gents, it's time for a game of Who Am I? We played last week. Matt Cooper got the win. So how it's going to work is I picked someone in the field this week in the KLM Open. I'll give you some obscure facts that get a little less obscure as we go on, and you have to try and work out who exactly I'm talking about. So let's get into it. First up, Who Am I? My best finish is tie for fourth in the Mauritius Open earlier this season.
Are we allowed unlimited guesses?
You are. Allowed one per clue.
I'll go Sami Välimäki, but he probably didn't quite play well enough on Sunday for fourth.
No, it is not Sami, but a good guess all round. So next up, on the DP World Tour website, I rank third in strokes gained off the tee.
I've got it. John Wong Ko. Is it John Wong Ko?
That is phenomenal. It is John Wong Ko. The other ones I was going to go and say, I was born in France 25 years ago. I've earned just under 200,000 euros and I'm of South Korean descent. Quite remarkable. Well done, Ben Coley.
Honestly, that'll be the greatest thing I achieved this week. So happy days.
Don't say that on a betting podcast. Thanks so much, Ben.
Until Sunday, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done. That is one big. You and Matt Cooper leading with 1.8, which is great company. And you're also trying to take his fame of telling obscure stories with your...
I will never compete with Matt Cooper when it comes to... I use his stories when I go to parties. I don't go to parties.
Well, there you go. Well done. And that's who I picked this week as someone I fancy may go quite well. But remember, if you don't fancy betting at all, then please do go on the website and play the DP World Tour fancy game. You pick your six players, and there are lots of great prizes to be won when you build out your team. Time now to have a look at the Charles Schwab Challenge on the PGA Tour. Yes, on the other side of the Atlantic, it's time to look at the Charles Schwab Challenge from Colonial Country Club in Texas. It must be a theme for this time of the year because this tournament also went to a playoff last time. Sam Burns holding a long-range putt to beat his best friend and world number one, Scottie Scheffler. Not many people did that last year. That was on the first hole for his third win of the season, and he got to rock that very beautiful and stylish Royal Tartan jacket. And this will be its last look of how it is before it gets a renovation under the eyes of Gil Hanse. It comes in at a little over 7,000 yards, with the winning score last year only being single digits at 9 under. So one of the highest scoring events. A lot of that thanks to the horrible horseshoe. On the front nine, holes 3 to 5, play as tough as any three on the circuit, really, including the fourth, which is a 247-yard par three, which has never had a hole-in-one in this event. So step up, I think, Michael Block. I think everyone is on board with a little baby driver there, probably for him. The course, we'll get into it shortly with the guys. It looks like a bit of a premium on accuracy off the tee, narrow, tree-lined, small greens. But some names interesting there are Ryan Fox, and Minwoo Lee, who have both got special temporary membership. So on the PGA Tour after great finishes again. Either of them caught your eye at all here, Niall, looking at Colonial this week?
Yeah, two exciting prospects, to be fair. And there's a few more on the DP World Tour as well. You know, I think we'll probably add Adrian Morong to that list in a few months' time or maybe next year. And, you know, Thorbjørn Olesen's another who's playing absolutely magnificent golf these days. But, yeah, Ryan Fox and Minwoo both featured in PGA last week once again. Impressive performances, especially Ryan Fox. He comes after a top 30 finish in the Masters too. Another impressive effort there, first time. So, yeah, exciting golfers. And, of course, Ryan Fox in particular. If he had been playing in the KLM Open this week, we'd have been looking at him too with his links form and obviously his effort last year. And Minwoo Lee obviously has a win on links as well. So, yeah, exciting times for those two guys moving to the PGA Tour. And I'd be quite excited about Ryan Fox's chances of getting a victory later on this season.
Yeah, he's been in great form, has Foxy. And one more name that we've seen a lot over the years on the DP World Tour is Matthias Schwab. And he is in the Schwab Challenge. I mean, it doesn't get better than that at all. He's come in for Adam Svensson, the Canadian, who's just withdrawn as the alternate. But Ben, Colonial, it's a classic-style golf course, very much synonymous with Ben Hogan, who won 5 times here. In more recent times, Jordan Spieth. I mean, ridiculous record. He's come in the top 14, 9 of 10 goes. The other one was 32nd. There's a win. What does he love about this venue? What do you as well like about this venue when you watch this tournament at Colonial?
Well, Jordan Spieth is probably, of all the great golfers we have around at the moment, the one who you could drop into that Ben Hogan era and he wouldn't look out of place. He works the ball both ways. He has a magnificent short game. He's just a bit old school. And I think that probably summarizes Colonial quite nicely. A lot of old school golfers have won here. And certainly you've not had to be a big hitter down the years. Now, on the face of it, that's changed in the last couple of renewals. We had Jason Kokrak win. And then we had Burns versus Scheffler in a playoff. I think that really just tells us more than anything about the sort of the shift in golf overall. There are more players who drive the ball like that. And they're when they do, if anybody like a Jason Kokrak or a Sam Burns has a week where they hit plenty of fairways, obviously, as we saw with Koepka last week, they're very hard to beat because they can gain such an advantage off the tee. But I think the point here at Colonial is that anything goes. We've had players as wild as Patton Kizzire in the mix. We've had Kevin Na had a brilliant course record here. Spieth, obviously a very different player to the last two champions as well. Jason Duffner, Zach Johnson down the years, Adam Scott, David Lingmuth, loads of players who don't overpower golf courses because you can't really do that here. You have to be outstanding off the tee to do that. So I shouldn't have said you can't. It just requires an extraordinary performance. So, I'm excited about this week. It's an interesting one because we're after a major, aren't we? And I dare say that Spieth probably wouldn't be here were it not in Texas with his little wrist problem that he's had. And that probably influences my decision-making a little bit as well because he would have been a big interest at 14 to 1.
Yeah, absolutely. If we look at the top of the market, yeah, he's 14 to 1, bigger on the exchange. We've got Scotty Scheffler leading it for obvious reasons at 9 to 2. Victor Hovland after the close call at 14 to 1. Tony Finau the same. It's a pretty stacked field given the week after. And as Jordan Spieth already missed an event in Texas, you can tell that he really wants to impress in front of his home fans. And there have been some interesting winners. I mean, Spieth was 7-1 in 2016, but a few years earlier, Boo Weekly won it at 100-1. The average odds over the last 10 events have been 40-1. I know some people like looking at that, and later on we might see a name around or number around that. Looking at those winners and everything else, Niall, was there a certain attribute that stands out for you when you were picking your selections this week at Colonial?
Yeah, well, it's certainly interesting. Obviously, you know, the likes of David Toms and Zach Johnson and Spieth and Chris Kirk, and you know, you've got a profile there of players who were doing well. But you know, as Ben says, that's definitely shifted a little in the last couple of years. Obviously, Daniel Berger hits the ball a fair way as well, but Kokrak and Burns in particular hit the ball far. Not exactly the profile you would have been looking at a couple of years ago for winning this event, but ball striking is absolutely key around here. You know, you go back to 2019 and 2020, the 11 players who made up the top five in each year there, all ranked in the top 10 for strokes gained tee to green for the week. 2021, only one of the top six was outside the top 20 tee to green, and in 2022, the top six all inside the top 20 in tee to green, and most of that is made up through off the tee and on approach. So ball striking is absolutely key around here. You're not going to score well unless you hit the ball well from tee to green. It's an interesting thought for punters whether they go with you know, the archetypal Chris Kirk's or Zach Johnson's this time around, or they branch out a little and go for those, as Ben says, who can hit it long and far these days.
Yeah, as you said, there are those names been thrown around, and even you know, Englishman Justin Rose, he's had a win here in 2018 and coming to some form as well, so could be in the mix. So let's get into it and find out exactly who you've got, and we will come to you, Ben, first for your headline pick here.
Yeah, I think I just got a feeling that this is a bit of a stretch for Scheffler, and I'm not going to, for the second week running, put people away and tell you not to back one of the most likely winners, but he's obviously quite short. And if you throw in how poor Finau was last week, Spieth's potential injury, the fact that Sungjae's gone from Korea to a major, and then, I mean, maybe a weekend off will have helped him. I thought the top of the market was kind of, there weren't many great options, and I kept coming back to Colin Morikawa. So I'm going to make him my headline selection. He was a runner-up here in 2020, the first event when the PGA Tour restarted. He should have won, missed a very short putt as he went on to lose to Daniel Berger. He was 14th the year after and 40th last year. But if you look at his strokes gained approach figures throughout these three tournaments, he's ranked 3rd, 2nd and 7th. And you might say, well, that's just Morikawa. Well, he doesn't have records at courses like that very often, you know, like to do that year in, year out for, you know, 12 rounds at this golf course. He has just set up chance after chance. And the difference between second in 2020 and 40th last year is the 6-shot turnaround in his putting. We have to chance the putter. That's always going to be the case when you're backing Morikawa. You know there is a chance he has a shocker on the greens. He's been a little bit more stable in that department this year. He putted perfectly fine last week. And I thought his effort at the USPGA, he was on my shortlist there. And then as the tournaments unfolded, the one doubt I had was whether, you know, whether he could get away with not being explosive off the tee. And as the tournament unfolded, really, I think we got the answer. Like, it was very, very difficult to compete there without being a 320-yard driver. So to finish just outside the top 20, I was perfectly happy with that. He's obviously determined to win a tournament for the first time since November 2021. A lot of people will be determined to win this tournament, but I think of the market leaders, he's the one who won't be missing an opportunity like this or wanting to pass up an opportunity like this. So, I think he's a rock solid bet. And if he putts well, he's bound to be banged there.
Yep, Absolutely. The putting is always the thing with him. And it wasn't bad last week, as you say. And he was, I think everyone in the top 11 was in the top 25 for driving distance. So he just couldn't, you can't compete with that. Which was the one thing that obviously held him back. And he has had a runner up here in 2020. And even when he wasn't in great form, he still, you know, managed to make the cut last time out. So he is 16-1 for 8 places. You can still get there for Colin Morikawa. And that was 3 points each way was allocated from Ben on his headline pick. And Niall, who for you is going to headline for us?
Yeah, I'm going in on Cameron Davis. Probably difficult for Ben to go in 2 weeks on the trot, but after a 65, the final day there at the PGA, I was obviously super impressed with that. I don't think he'll have a hangover from that either because he wasn't really in contention. He did hang around all week, but he wasn't in the thick of it, obviously, in the last day, even though his fourth place suggests that. It was kind of telegraphed, and Ben was on top of it, you know, just a couple of weeks previous to that. He had produced his best ball striking performance of the season at Harbortown. So that's seventh there at Harbortown. Another a similar track to this where you need to play well tee to green, not necessarily, you know, the longer hitters you'd be looking to there either. Similar profile to this. Together with that and the sixth place at Sawgrass, another decent tee to green performance, done good work on the greens that week as well. That's three top sevens in his last six events. Harbortown, Sawgrass, and then last week in New York. They're three pretty difficult events, tough driving events as well. He's driving the ball long and he's driving it straight. And that's just kind of in the mould of what Jason Kokrak and Sam Burns have done here in the last couple of years. He's got better here year on year as well. Three appearances. He missed the cut first time around, 45th 2 years ago, and then seventh last year as well. So yeah, I'm hoping he can bring that PGA form here this week. And as Ben said, there's a few towards the top of the market who you could put a couple of negatives against. I actually think Scotty Scheffler is quite short this week, even though he seems to contend every week. But yeah, I'm just hoping Cameron Davis takes confidence from that effort on Sunday and goes and wins his second PGA Tour event.
Yeah, not as you say. Last year, he was only 4 shots off the leaders, and that was with a final round 72. So he was right in there. And it's the putter again, similar to Morikawa. I think he ranks 155th on tour for total putting, which is sort of Colin numbers. But last week, was 63rd and got him in contention and nice each way payouts. I'm sure Ben loves hearing his name. He is. And also, if you believe it, if you like omens, Niall, he's 40-1, which is the average odds for the winner of the last 10 editions. So, you know, he's there for 8 places still currently for the Australian Cam Davies. And stake-wise, that was 1.5 points each way allocated from Niall on Cam. We've got one more from you, please, Ben. Who are you picking to finish off and round off your outrights?
Yeah, I love Sepp Straka this week. I was amazed at the price he was quoted at. I think look, he's not the most consistent, so perhaps that's it. But sometimes when players sort of backdoor a top 10 at a major, as he did last week, there's a tendency to take it with a sort of pinch of salt and not give them the full credit that they deserve for that. But he started well. He just had a difficult third round, but finished like a train for seventh place. If you look at the stats, he was first in greens, one of the best drivers in the tournament in total driving terms. So he was long and he was accurate, fourth in fairways. I think he was second in strokes gained approach, fifth in strokes gained tee to green. It was just a rock solid ball striking performance. He putted about average and finished seventh in a major full of world-class players and full of players who are a little bit longer than he is as well on that leaderboard. And I think the primary reason why he's still been left at a big price is that his course form looks poor. He's missed the cut in both previous starts of the golf course. The two things I'd say about that, one is that Daniel Berger had done nothing before he won this. Jason Kokrak, I think, played 6 times, did nothing, then finished third and first. Adam Scott's played here 6 times. He's won one of them. He's been pretty average on the other 5. So I don't think it's necessarily got to be that sort of Jordan Spieth-like always in the mix here profile. And if you look at Straka, he shot 66. He's a first ever round at the course. It was in 2020, world-class field, inside the top 20 after round one, missed the cut by a shot. He came back a year later. He shot 68 in round one, again inside the top 20, again struggled on Friday and missed the cut by a shot. That's 2 years ago, and I think that's significant. If that had been last year, then maybe it would be different. But he's come a long way in 2 years. He's a PGA Tour winner now. He's played well in both Masters. He's got a top 10 in a major. And he's obviously got his focus on the Ryder Cup as well. He likes playing in the southern states. He's been based in Georgia for a long time. He lost a playoff for the Sanderson Farms. He lost a playoff at Southwind, which is a really good comparison with this. And he won the Honda Classic, which is a decent one as well. I think if you look at Daniel Berger, second at the Honda, first at Southwind, and he ties in nicely. So I think there are loads and loads of reasons, as you can tell, why Straka could play well here. Negative is that he doesn't always back it up one week to the next, but the price is on offer. I mean, he did the back end of last season after that. That Southwind second came right out of the blue and he played well the next three tournaments. So if he does the same, he could make the prices look all kinds of wrong.
There you go. I mean, that's our first love on the tips. Love Sepp Straka. And he amazingly still, one bookie is 125 to one still for six places. So that is still there, but he's been cut elsewhere. And as you say, last week, and the coverage mentioned a few times, if he had held a few putts, he really would have been right up there. He led in greens in reg and then just let him down towards the end. But you've got to think the rumours and words and whisperings and murmurings of him in the Ryder Cup are growing. And if you keep listening to him, you could well believe them. So it could be a very interesting one to follow there, the Austrian this week. And finally, Niall, who have you got to join and round off our card for the Charles Schwab Challenge?
Yeah, I'm quite keen on Hayden Buckley. Not quite a household name, and anybody who just tunes into the majors and PGA last week might be a bit confused as to who I'm tipping up here. But yeah, Hayden Buckley, I was quite taken by his performance the Sony Open earlier on in the year. I was actually heartbroken because I backed him as well. He faced kind of some adversity there early on in that round, and I was really impressed by how he rallied in the back nine, held plenty of putts, recovered quite well. In his rookie season the previous before, he kicked off his PGA Tour campaign with two top 10s in his first three events. He went on then to finish 13th in the US Open that Matt Fitzpatrick won. And since, I just think he's totted up a few really good performances on tracks that are really interesting looking at this week at Colonial. Just late on in 2022, he was fifth at Narashino in the Zozo, which is another tight tree-lined track where you need to hit the ball well from tee to green. Obviously second at Wailea to CU Kim, as I mentioned. And then since he was fifth at Harbortown just at the start of April. 26th again in the PGA last week, and of course a 10th place in Texas at the start of April as well is another feather in his cap for a good performance in this state. It's only his second PGA Tour season, but he's went close a couple of times now. And I'm quite keen on him just because his efforts so far have shown that he performs well on these tracks where ball striking is key. And ball striking is his strength, and his weakness, his Achilles heel, really is around the greens. I'll need him really maybe to up his game in that department this week if I want him to win. But distance and accuracy is his real strength. And I think, you know, the profile has slightly shifted towards that here at Colonial the last couple of years. So yeah, I'm happy to get Hayden Buckley on side once again, and hopefully I won't be heartbroken for the second time this season.
He was very impressive last week. He had the third most birdies. So as you say, it's just around the greens if he cuts out those errors. And something that also helps you here now, he is fourth on the tour for strokes gained off the tee. And last year, six of the top 10 all ranked in the top 10 for that at this event. So clearly that's the premium and that's very much in his wheelhouse. So he is 90 to 1 for six places you can still get for Hayden Buckley. And if you want triple figures, they are there, but for five places. So that allocation from Niall was 1 point each way to join the 1.5 points each way on Cam Davies. That gives us time now for Ben Coley to tell us his top 20 for this event, and then we'll work out, put it in the calculator, the cross double odds. So Ben, who are you throwing at us to come top 20 at Colonial?
I'm going to go with someone who did that last year, Christian Bezuidenhout, who was in the top 20 all week, actually. So he never really had to sweat, even though he had a disappointing final round under really tough conditions. On his debut in the event in 2020, that was his only other appearance here. Lower scoring conditions probably didn't suit him, but he shot 69-70, missed the cut by a shot, I think. In both of those, his approach play was of a very, very high standard. And he's the right sort of player for this. You know, it's tough. I mean, he's won at Valderrama and Leopard Creek. It's tree lined. The same applies. Pretty thick, rough, all that sort of stuff. He's generally accurate off the tee. We know he's not the longest by any stretch. He relies on quality approach work, but also getting that putter hot. And if you go back to last week in the PGA Championship, there's simply no way he could compete at that golf course without putting the lights out. And he happened to have, I think, his worst putting display of the year so far. So to shoot a pair of 73s, miss the cut by one, his approach play was sort of top five, top 10 in the field to the halfway point. He essentially told us that he's playing just as well as he played when 23rd in the Nelson, when 19th in the Heritage, when 28th in the Texas Open, when 13th in the Players. He just didn't have his putter and the course was too long for him. So he should get back to his best on the greens. You know, he's generally been excellent. He was 15th in the Nelson, 6th in the Heritage, 24th in Texas. And in five of his last six starts, his approach play has been top 20. So I think if you put that formula together, like a top 20 driving accuracy, top 20 strokes gained approach, top 20 in putting, then the top 20 on the leaderboard should be a natural result from that. And I think he's got every chance to do that and maybe even more. I think this is one of the events he can win on the PGA Tour. But in terms of this wager, I'll be happy enough if he's inside that top 20.
Nice. As always, you've just taken every single one of my notes. Bar one, 444 holes he now is without a three putt, which is by far and away the longest on the PGA Tour. So just shows even for a bad
week. We know what's
for
happening
him
on the first hole there, Ollie. Yeah, three stabs from 6 feet.
on small colonial greens, like nothing like it. But yeah, I saw that instantly with Valderrama as well. Tight tree line and an impressive win there. And even with a final round 72, which is the theme this week for some of our picks last year, he still had that top 20. So he is 13-5, and that's 2 points from Ben there on that. And if we do the little calculator on the two of them, for 1 point, we've got the cross double of Mathieu Pavon and Christian Bezuidenhout, which is just under 15-1 for top 20 double, which is pretty tasty odds overall. So a very thorough preview of both events this week. And now it's time to recap all of the outright picks and special bets from Ben and Niall. Starting with the KLM Open, and Ben Coley has gone for Marcus Helligkilde at 40-1 for 1.5 points each way. And then Guido Migliozzi at 50-1. 1 point each way for him. Niall Lyons has got Adrian Meronk at 14-1, and that is a 3 point win only bet. And Ross Fisher at 80-1, 1 point each way for him. And he's thrown in a top 20 special bet of Mathieu Pavon at 3-1, good for 2 points. And going across the Atlantic into the Charles Schwab Challenge, Niall Lyons has got Cam Davis at 40-1 for 1.5 points each way, and Hayden Buckley at 100-1 for 1 point each way. Ben Coley tipping Colin Morikawa at 16-1, and that's 3 points each way from him, and Sepp Strucker at 125-1, 1 point each way. And his top 20 bet in that event is Christian Bezuidenhout at 13-5 for 2 points. And for the special bet of the week, the cross double top 20 of Pavon and Bezuidenhout is just under 15-1 and good for 1 point. And there's the recap. The only thing left to do is to thank Ben. Please, can you remind the lovely listeners of your Twitter handle so they can send in their thanks?
It's at Ben Coley Golf. I'm trying to tweet less as well, so you won't have to put up with daily updates of everything in the world of golf and more.
There you go. And if it's just a like, you know he's busy. And Niall, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BetGolfWorld. And I will follow you back if you reply to my random tweets about my favourite confectionery and crisps and stuff like that.
Perfect. We're getting growing followings of crisps. So please do that. Interact with them. We love it. Remember to hashtag the tips as well. But there you go. That's everything from the two events. Good luck this week with your bets. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. We will be back next week to see if we've continued our good form and start to the season. And we will also look ahead to the Porsche European Open and the Memorial Tournament presented by Workday from Muirfield Village. See you then and enjoy the golf.